Good evening. Please join me in the Anabakoach. Anabakoach, Gedula Chimimcha, Tati, Terura, Alephet Gimel, Yutav Tzadin. The gematria of the six letters, the number value is 506, which is one of the 72 names, Vav Shin Resh, and also the phrase Ahavat Hinam, love for no reason, unconditional love, which is what this teaches us spiritually, is everything starts with love. Love needs to be injected into everything we do. Kaberinat Amcha Sagvenu Taharenu Nora Kufrei Shayan Sintet Nun. Two three-letter Hebrew words, Kra and Satan. Kra means to tear up, and Satan is the negative entity that gives us free will. Kra Satan, those same six letters can be reorganized into two other Hebrew words, Sha'ar Katan, small gates. And it's a hint to remind us that the only way Satan comes into our life is through the small gates where we haven't put policemen and judges to evaluate what comes into our soul. Those gates are our eyes, our ears, our nose, and our mouth. And if we let Satan in, we have to accept the consequences. And if we use our judgment to eliminate Satan from entering, we also receive the benefit of those results. Na Gibor Dorshe Yehudcha Kevavat Shamrem Nun Gimel Dalet Yudkav Shin. Nun Gimel Dalet is the gematria of 57, which is the Hebrew word zan, which means parnasah, sustenance. And the sustenance is anything that we lack can be considered sustenance. Anything that we lack is what we need for love and existence, life and existence. Yud Kaf Shin is a sequence that we use to bring back the energy we've given to the negative side through our own mistakes. Barchen Taharen Rachamei Sidkatcha Tamid Gamrem Betet Resh Tzadi Taf Gimel. The two middle letters of this sequence, Resh and Tzadi, is a gematria of 290, which is the same gematria as the name Miriam. Miriam the prophetess, in whose merit the well of Miriam, the water that came and followed the Israelites through the desert. We think that life can't exist without water, but water is the essence of mercy, the essence of love. And this is what it really means to not be able to exist without water, not to be able to exist without love. Chasin kadosh berov tuvcha na'el adatach het kuf bet tet nunayim. This is the sequence in the verse from the month of Tishrei, which we are in now. The two letters that we use to control the month of Tishrei, the energy of Tishrei. The Pei, which created the planet Noga, the planet Venus. And the Lamed, that created the constellation Mosnaim, the scales, the constellation of Libra. And also the month of Tishrei. Yachid Gea Lamcha Pene Zokre Kedushatach Yud Gimelamed Pei Zayin Kuf. This sequence of six letters is used to speed up the spreading of the wisdom of Kabbalah during this, the sixth millennium. Shavatenu Kabel Ushma Tziakatenu Yodea Talumot Shinkufav Tzariyutav. These six letters are used as a visualization tool, a meditation tool to manifest what you want your life to be. Use these letters for that purpose. Whatever you want your life to be, whatever you expect it to be, use these, visualize it, and use these letters to manifest it. But always remember, it's easier to manifest something when you're sharing it. So that life that you're visualizing for yourself, you should be visualizing for the whole world, or at least another person. And the last verse is said in a whisper, which we refer to as silently. But as the frame of teaching, I will say it out loud. Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuto Le'olam Vayed. We are now reading a verse from the Zohar to bring the energy of the Zohar into the class. Vayihi Noam Adonai Eloheinu Aleinu Ma'aseh Yadeinu Kunenehu Aleinu Ma'aseh Yadeinu Kunenehu. This is verse 28 from the portion of Bereshit. It's the first verse in section 5, and there was light. Vayomer Elohim Yehior, Vayehior, Mehaka Ihu Shiruta Le'ashkaha, Genizin Chech Itbere, Alma Pifrat De'ad Kaka Hava, Biklal Uvatar Ithadar. Kalal lemecheve, kalal ufrat, uklal. And Elohim said, let there be light, and there was light. A verse from Bereshit, or Genesis, chapter 1, verse 3. From here, from this saying, we can begin to learn the secrets of how the world was created in details. Because until now, the creation was discussed only generally. In the verse, in the beginning, Elohim created, which is verse 1. After this, the description returns to the general, then the particular, and then the general again. The verse is talking about creation, obviously, but more particularly, it's explaining the concepts of general and particular. And just like a hologram has become part of modern science, where every aspect of the picture is the same larger picture. In our world, creation, every aspect of creation, which means every aspect of our world, is the same in specific details than it is generally. And this is a very difficult concept to understand, and we could talk about this one discussion for about 17 years. So just understand that the verse is bringing the idea of creation, and creation both on the general level and on the specific level, and there's really no difference. Everything is unified. Welcome to the 8th class of this beginning series again. Phase 2, Part 2, under the 6th class. Before we go on, does anybody have any questions from last week? Okay, last week we were talking about restriction, and we do have a new person in the class here, so some of the vocabulary will be difficult to understand. That's why I suggest you catch up with the recordings. The idea of restriction, to summarize it, is the way we make change in the world. Our spiritual work is restriction. Restriction is a three-step process. You stop your reaction. You question the motivation of your reaction. You change that motivation from one of selfishness to be one of desire to receive in order to share. And then you proceed with an action. Now, I said four steps, but earlier I said it's a three-step process. Because the action that you ultimately do may be exactly the same action as your reactive nature said and started to do. It may be a totally different action. But whatever action you do is in a new movie, is in a new cassette of your life, because restriction causes change. Restriction reveals light, just like in an electric bulb that will not work without a filament, which is called a resistor. But in Kabbalah, the term is restriction. The filament says to the electron, I know you're wanted, but don't come. Stay away. Push back. And it's only through that pushing back, in saying no, in stopping the reaction, that light is revealed. And it's the same thing in our life. What does the revelation of light mean in our life? It means fulfillment. It means pleasure. When we are happy, we are connected to the light. Whether you call that God, or you call it an aspect of God, or you call it the higher source, or whatever language you use, and even if you're an atheist who doesn't accept that there is a God, it still works for you. The tool is called restriction. When you do restriction, you are choosing a better cassette, a better movie of your life. Remember, the overall frame is to understand our movie is what we created during Rosh Hashanah through Yom Kippur and into the Sukkot and the holidays that are still coming up during the month of Tishrei. But once that movie for this year is created, that movie is created in infinite possibilities, infinite movie cassettes of my life. And each person had the opportunity to make that movie work for themselves. And what God does is put those movies together in ways that make it seem natural, that the words that I say in my movie and the words that you say in your movie are part of the same conversation. But that process, the movie plays. There is no free will in a movie. It's just, I'm going to start a sentence and it gets finished. And somebody else hears those words and reacts and they get finished. But at every point in that movie, I have the possibility to stop my reaction. When I stop my reaction, I'm choosing a movie that has less chaos, because I'm a different person than the person who was in that movie. I have changed, and therefore the movie has to change. If I choose to not do restriction and just play out the movie, it plays out. If I choose to do a negative action, that negative action is going to come back into the movie as chaos. Now, that might be in a later lifetime, or it might be later in my life, or it might be immediately. Those are part of the movies. The action of doing the negativity, doing the negative action, is part of the movie. I have the choice to change that. In the parable or in the metaphor where we talked about the man who pulled a gun on another and killed him and found out that his widow has 12 hungry children who have no source of support, and he's been the cause of all of that pain and suffering and chaos all the way down through creation. That's part of his movie from this point forward. And he had the choice of saying no. And he has the tool of tshuva to bring it back to that point, to say no again. Restriction is doing that level of tshuva before you have to. Restriction is three steps. Stop your reaction. Ask yourself what's the motivation of that reaction. And transform your desire to receive for oneself alone into the desire to receive in order to share. And then the movie starts playing again. You do an action, whatever action you decide. That action will start your new movie. Your movie with less chaos. Now, here's where we get into some crazy kinds of understandings about restriction. We said last week that stopping the reaction is easy. And it really is easy. The problem develops in that second step. What's my motivation for that action? That is always a lie. Because after the sin of Adam, and we received selfishness into our bodies, into ourselves, there is that energy of the Satan, that energy of the chaos creator, that energy that gives us free will, that when it hears the question, what's my motivation for this action, this reaction, gives you an explanation. So let's put it into practical terms. You're at work, and your boss comes in and starts yelling at you for something that you supposedly did that has absolutely nothing to do with your life. You didn't cause it. It's not part of your life. You weren't even aware of the situation till the boss started to yell. So what is the situation? What is the cause? The boss is yelling. The movie plays out. Your reaction is to yell back. Or your reaction is to sit quietly and listen. Or your reaction is to get up and walk out of the room. Or your reaction is to hit him. Or your reaction is any one of an infinite possible different actions that you could take. Each of them is your reaction. Each of them, by definition, for lack of any other way to make it strong, is selfish. always a desire to receive for oneself alone. Always. So anytime you hear the explanation, when you ask the question, what's my motivation for this action? And your mind says to you, because I want to help other people. Because I want to see my boss happy. Because I really didn't do it, but I'll accept the responsibility to save the other person from their just rewards. Or any one of 1 million or more statements that we say to ourselves every day. Your reaction, your answer to the question of what is your motivation for this reaction, you will always lie to yourself. And you have to push past the lies. You have to know that they're lies, even though they seem right, and that's my true feeling. Push past the lies and ask that question again. No, that's a lie. What's my true motivation? What's my unconscious motivation? What's my reason for doing this? This unconscious motivation that comes from my previous lifetime. This unconscious motivation that comes from me being given the opportunity to grow and change spiritually. What is that true motivation? And it will come to you. Maybe not the first time you do it. Maybe not the millionth time you do it. But you will eventually come to get a correct answer to that motivation. But all the while that you're lying, push back. When you're tired of pushing back and you're ready to accept moving on, okay. But know that until you get to that ultimate unconscious motivation, and the purpose of restriction is to bring that unconscious motivation into your conscious mind so that you can look at it and you can see exactly how ugly selfishness is. All of this has nothing to do with anything that's going on around you. Your boss is still yelling while you're stopping your reaction. Your boss is still yelling while you're looking at your unconscious motivations, while you're looking at the lies that your mind plays on you, so that you won't be able to see your unconscious motivation. And then you arrive at this point, okay, I'm doing this because I'm frightened, or I'm doing this because it's my pattern, or what other reasons we tell each other, not even each other, we tell ourselves. And this selfish motivation can now be looked at. I'm doing this as the example that the boss is yelling at me. I'm doing it because I'm frightened of him. He has the power to fire me. He has the power to withhold my money. He has the power to truly terrorize my life. And I'm frightened and I'm afraid because previously, in previous lifetimes, other people have terrorized me. Other people have controlled me through their being my boss. And my life lesson in this life is XYZ. It's ugly to be frightened. Reactions when you're frightened are ugly. To run away isn't healthy. To hit the boss isn't healthy. To scream back isn't healthy. So what is healthy? Once I know my selfish motivation, I can change it. That's the third step. Remember the metaphor I'm using of changing or utilizing a scale from zero sharing to 100% sharing. And my reaction and my selfish motivation is a zero sharing. It's 100% selfish. So what and how do I change that thought to be more sharing? I'm not going to reach 100% sharing on the first try, or maybe not even on the 100,000th try. But I can change it from zero sharing to 1% sharing, or 30% sharing, or 70% sharing. So, my selfish motivation is fear. My sharing motivation is to help my boss overcome his fear. What does it mean to help my boss overcome his fear? The reason that you are motivated by fear, the person standing in front of you is your mirror. Your motivation is their motivation in their reactivity. I need to help my boss overcome his fear. So it can be done on a level of, let's just move on in a normal, typical level of, don't worry, boss, everything will be fine and I'll take care of it. Or it could be a deeper level. Boss, stop yelling. You're being afraid for no reason. But whatever your action is, the reason you're doing the action is to raise the consciousness of both you and your boss to one of sharing. You can't control his consciousness except that he is your mirror. So just change your consciousness. I'm going to get up and walk out of the room because my boss will stop yelling when I leave. And that will lower his blood pressure, and he will be healthier through that action. Simple, straightforward logic. Is it true? Yes, maybe no. But my reason for walking out of the room is not based on fear. My reason for walking out of the room is based on helping someone else, sharing with someone else. Now let's transform a little bit, now that we've gone over again, and we'll continue in throughout your Kabbalistic studies. You'll see restriction throughout it. As you go through it, we'll talk about some of the unusual ideas. You're in pain. You have a toothache. What's your reaction to a toothache? Give me some Tylenol. Give me some aspirin. Give me some Bufferin. Give me some Excedrin. What's on the boxes? Temporary relief from pain. Do you want temporary relief or permanent relief? Do you want to have another toothache, or do you want to get rid of your toothache forever? In our society, we'll go to a dentist. He'll drill out the tooth, put in a cavity, put in a filling, or he'll put a cap on the tooth. But is it permanently gone? Does the potential exist for that tooth to be back in pain? You want permanent relief from pain. Stop your reaction. What's my reaction? Reaching for the Tylenol. What's my motivation? Selfishness. I don't like pain. No one in their right mind does like pain. So what's the sharing response to not wanting pain? Please, give me more pain. You want to give me the pain? Let's get it over with. Give me more pain. I want to cleanse this completely. This is the way that we can cleanse something I did wrong in a previous lifetime. This is where we can cleanse something I did in this lifetime. This is the purpose of a toothache. This is the purpose of any pain. I have the opportunity to cleanse something through this pain. It could be the pain of the Shoah, of the Holocaust. It could be the pain of cancer and chemotherapy and all of the rest of the chaos in the plagues of our society. Ultimately, the reaction is to not want pain. And when you say, give me more pain so that I can cleanse what's taking place between me and this other person. The other person may not be in your life because it's from a previous lifetime. The sharing consciousness is, give me more pain so that I can cleanse this world. And what happens? You get more pain. Your tooth goes through the roof. You are crawling off that ceiling. But then it's gone. You will not have any more pain from that tooth. And I know there will be people out there who will say, this whole discussion is crazy. What about the infection that caused the pain? And the answer is to delve into all of those questions with what is the cause and what is the effect. What is the cause of a toothache? Physically, it's an infection. Spiritually, it's something needs to be cleansed. It's a wake-up call. Wake up, recognize that you did something wrong, and here's the effect in your life. The Satan says, the negative force says, oh, I'm giving this person pain. That's why he has a toothache. He's going to be busy with the toothache. He's going to be involved with this, and he's not going to do his spiritual work. I'm doing my job, which is not to win. The job of Satan is just to make you busy and lengthen the process. So you get a toothache, you take the Tylenol, Satan did his job. He lengthened the process because you put another veil on the cleansing that you have to go through. Why do you have to go through it? Because you're still the same person who did whatever you did to cause the pain. The pain has come. You're still that person. How do you change it? You have to change yourself. When you ask for more pain, that's definitely a change. It's a change that says to the Satan, this guy is crazy. This guy is not worth my time. This guy doesn't understand anything. Leave him alone. So Satan gives you more pain. You get more pain. But what you get is the pain that you would get the next time you'd get the toothache and the time after that. So you get it all at once, and then it's over. And you're cleansed. And you will have permanent relief from tooth pain in that tooth. Now, I have a roommate who has had toothaches for 3 to 4 years that I know of. And he doesn't have insurance, so he had to go and live with this process. And each time, he would get an infection in his tooth. And he'd reach for the Tylenol instead of saying, give me more pain. And each time the Tylenol would work, the pain would go away for 2, 3 days, 4 days. And maybe his immune system overcame the infection, or maybe it got worse, and the infection got stronger and came back. eventually we spoke about doing this technique. Well, he has found a dentist who doesn't charge him, and all of his teeth, he hasn't had a pain in his tooth in the last year and a half. How did he find a dentist that didn't charge him? Hashem sends the tools. Hashem provides. The point is, the dentist doesn't charge him. Doesn't mean that the dentist has a tikkun with you that he wouldn't charge you. Everything is relative to you and the person, the various souls and how they interact. But once you start using restriction, once you start the process of stopping your reaction, the rest of it falls into place. And you'll see how this system works. You won't see it exactly. I joke with people in this teaching, I said it last week. When you wake up in the morning, when you open the drawer, which pair of underwear are you putting on? The one on the top, the one in the middle, or the one on the bottom? Are you putting it on because you're sharing, or are you putting it on because you're selfish, or you're putting it on out of habit? Wake up. It's an opportunity to do restriction. I'm only wearing this middle pair of underwear because it makes me feel good that this area of my body has that extra covering, and that if I feel good, I can help people to feel good. If I'm feeling bad, I cannot help people to feel good. Is it a game to play like that? It's the beginning part of the game. But as the more you do restriction, the more items you do restriction about, the more you bring your consciousness of restriction from the unconscious to the conscious level, the more it impacts your life. And eventually, the reason you wear underwear is to share. It's an automatic consciousness. It's a habit of consciousness of sharing that becomes part of you. It becomes who you are. We still have more time tonight to talk about restriction. And restriction is something that should be talked about and reinforced and talked about. Restriction is the spiritual work. We call it a tool, but ultimately the only way you remove bread of shame, the only way you can return to the endless is to remove bread of shame. And the only way to remove bread of shame is through restriction. Restriction is a tool, but it's also the work. Every human being participated in the sin of Adam and Eve. When that took place, Adam and Eve fell. The midrash, the metaphors are that Adam and Eve fell from 100 feet tall to 8 feet tall. Spiritually, Adam fell from the spiritual world into the physical world. Adam and Eve fell from the sin. Each and every one of us comes into this world with two corrections to achieve. One correction is to do restriction on something in their life that only they can do. An example of this is, I heard a story of somebody who was soliciting tzedakah in Paris, and his car overheated and he had to get some water for it. Charity. He was soliciting charity. He was going door to door and asking people to buy Zohars. He was asking people to give donations. He was going to asking people if they knew what Kabbalah was. And he had knocked on a door that had a mezuzah so that he knew the person was Jewish. And the person didn't really want to speak to him and closed the door on his face. But it was the only house in the neighborhood that had a mezuzah. So when he went back to his car and he needed water to fill up the radiator, he decided to give the man another chance, and he went back to the house. Man opened the door. He was asked for a glass of water to pour into the radiator. Again, the man refused and shut the door in his face. He knocked on another door and was given a bottle of water, filled up the radiator, and rode home. The next day, he came back to the neighborhood, was in that same building doing his request for tzedakah, and understood he found out that the man had passed away that evening. The man will have another opportunity in his next lifetime to give water to somebody who requests it when he doesn't want to. It seems like a simple idea. I'll give you another simple idea where you have to do restriction. My teacher and his wife were in Israel playing tennis, and the ball was hit over the fence. In order to get the ball, they had to walk all the way around because the gate was on the opposite side. And walking down the path was a young girl in her teens. "Please throw us the ball." "No, I don't have the time," and walked on. How difficult is it to pick up a ball and throw it as you're walking? Desire to receive for oneself alone. Reactions. Each human being comes into this world to do a very simple act when they don't want to, when they're busy, when they're irritated, when they're totally out of sorts. And it's only through the practice of restriction that your consciousness will do restriction when that correction that is your share in the sin of Adam will be done. You get to do it, you don't do it. Either way, you achieve it, you don't have to come back. You don't achieve it, you get to come back and get another chance to do it. These are not difficult actions, they're simple actions. Restriction is the work. Each human being comes with two things to do. One is something that no other human being in the world can achieve. No one else can do it. You look at somebody as being less than you, change your mind. Because that person can do something you absolutely cannot do. Because you can't hand the water to that person. That's not your correction. That's his. You cannot do his work. And he is causing you to not be able to go back to the endless. Don't think less of him. Recognizing how important he is in your life. Love him. Give him the support to be able to see Kabbalah and to learn restriction. That person has a job to do. Only he can do it. The second aspect of each person's tikkun is more of a universal aspect. The legs of Adam walked up to the tree. They participated in the sin. If your soul root is from the leg of Adam, then any soul from that soul root, you have a joint correction to achieve. In the Scroll of Esther, the story of Queen Esther in Purim, Esther says, if I go into the king, I'm going to be killed. It's against, you know, it's death to walk into the king's chamber. And Mordecai says to her, and I'm paraphrasing, if you don't do it, Hashem will find someone else who will save the Jewish people. It's your choice. You, as part of her soul route, as the correction of Chava and Sarah, and down to her as the third one in the chain, she had to walk into the king to correct what Chava had done with Adam. If she hadn't done so, Hashem would have found another soul from that soul root and would have put that soul in that position to do that correction. We come into this world to achieve two things. Nothing else is all moving. Everything else is only movie and process. Two things, two corrections. One that only you can do, and one that you share with the soul roots that you share. Where were you in the body of Adam? You don't know. I don't know. There are ways to find out. But ultimately, two things to do. Does anybody have any questions about restriction? I'm sending you home to practice it. And your practice will be wrong. Everybody thinks when they hear these classes that they understand restriction. And you cannot understand restriction until you experience it. And know how simple and yet how difficult restriction is. Second piece of cake, a second bite of cake, restriction. Ultimately, the sin of Adam, the metaphor that's used is he took a bite of an apple, or he took a bite of a fig, or he took a bite of a fruit, a grape, or. But the sin was not the bite. The sin was the second bite. Why does cake not taste the same the second bite? Because in the first bite, you don't have to have restriction. There's no harm in that first bite of cake, that first piece of food that you love. But the second one, there's no restriction, the pleasure goes down. The third bite, the pleasure goes down some more, until it's gone. That's the masach, that's the curtain that is built into our physical world. We have a desire for anything. We have the pleasure of that desire fulfilled. That's the first bite. We do restriction, and we can have that pleasure continuously, forever. That's the endless world. We don't do restriction, or we do restriction incompletely, and that pleasure has to be reduced. That's the agreement that we, the vessel, made with the light when we said we want to be a creator. We want to be a co-creator with God. That's the purpose of this world. Removing the concept of bread of shame. Bread of shame is a simple concept. The more you receive from someone that you didn't earn, the more uncomfortable you become. The more you think less of yourself. The metaphor that we use is, let's go to lunch tomorrow, okay? We go to lunch, we have a wonderful meal, we have a wonderful time together, and I pick up the bill. Next week, let's do it again. We had a great time. You'll come again? We go next week. I picked up the bill. We had a wonderful time. Week after week after week, for 10 years, I picked up the bill. Do you want to go to lunch with me next week? Most people realize that they don't, that they haven't earned the lunch. They haven't been participating in the lunch on an equal level. It's not that it's taking advantage, it's receiving without earning.
Or reciprocate.
That's a form of earning. I give something back. My mother, Chas v'Shalom, may she live forever, and I appreciate her more every day that I miss her. My mother was the worst cook in the world. I was 22 years old before I had knew that steak came medium rare. It was burnt. That's the way you had steak. It was dark on the outside, and it was dark all the way through the middle. Steak was burned, period. End of conversation. There was nothing else. When I say my mother was not a good cook, my mother was not a good cook. But when my mother became ill with the illness that took her life, I would go and visit her, and she would cook steak. She knew I loved steak. But I love steak medium rare. I don't like steak burnt. My mother would cook steak, and I would eat it. And the reason that I ate it was to give my mother pleasure, because she would cook it, she would prepare it, she would be busy with it, she would burn it, but this is how she was able to show love. And I was able to earn love, show love, by eating this cake that I didn't really want. I was earning. I was reciprocating. She gave me life. She supported me for many, many years. She put in crap. She, you know, as a baby, she cleaned my shit. Let me know. Talk about whatever you want to talk about. And I'm not saying this because of this conversation. It's just part of it. We all have bread of shame. We come into this world with the knowledge that we haven't earned. Restriction is how we remove bread of shame. Restriction is how we earn the fulfillment, earn the pleasure, so we can receive it endlessly the way it's meant to be. The question is, what if you're doing restriction and you're feeling that the person isn't appreciated your restriction? He isn't appreciating what you're doing for him. Understand that your question about his not appreciation is your selfishness. No. It's the desire to receive for oneself alone. Why did you have that thought that the guy didn't appreciate what you're doing for him? You want to be honored. That's why you're even thinking this. If you are truly sharing, 100% sharing, you're just doing what you're doing for this person with no expectation of receiving anything back. Again, if you're consistently doing it and you're looking outside of yourself, saying, what is he doing?
I'm sorry, he's genuine. After a certain point,
there is a point 30 years down the road where you could ask that question. The next week, the next month, the third month, you're still involved in this level of, this is your mirror. The person you're doing this for is your mirror reflecting yourself back to you. When you get that thought, he doesn't appreciate what I'm doing, it's because you don't appreciate what you're doing. He's just reflecting you back to you. Does anybody have any other questions? Good night. Tomorrow night is a conference call on the intermediate class, and we will be talking about the four phases. And Thursday night, the conference call is continuing the Zohar on Bereshit. Chag Sameach, and enjoy your week.